sometimes you are put in roles of leadership. Sometimes you earn those roles. Sometimes people invite you into those roles. What brought you guys here today? Answer for your group, or at least for you. What's your name?
My name is Chris. For me, Chris, it was kind of just that idea of how will you be remembered? That was a question that I think kind of struck me a little bit, and I'm interested to
find out
more.
Why do you think that question struck you?
I mean, it's one of those things as you step into some of these leadership roles, you're kind of up there a little bit. You're guiding a group, and you want to know that you stick with that group, and you want to know that, you know, you're up there and you're making an impact on those people that you're leading.
Yeah. You're making an impact, and what does that mean now, right? And what does it mean for the future? And there are many times I think to myself in the different roles in which I have led, what happens when I leave? And at this point in my career, when I leave, I will probably be done, right? Retirement is coming. And what is the story? It's not just the story you write on your tomb, that you remember on your tombstone. It's what will people remember you for next year? What will people remember you when you go off to college next year and your high school teachers or your friends or people in your church remember you? Let's get one more. Anybody want to volunteer of why you came today? I see eyes looking at me, so there's where I'm going to go. See, if you look at me, I'm going to call in. Tell us your name and tell us why you're here today.
I'm Peyton, and I don't know what I want to be remembered for, so I hope this class will help me find out what I want to be remembered for.
Why do you think that's important to you to understand that or think about that?
Because when you leave anything, let's say it's a team or your church, you want to be remembered for something good or something you did, not for anything bad.
Yeah, you know, that's so true. The story we write, right? The story we write, and we will be remembered for. And I could tell you all kinds of things I've done in my life, high school, college, since college, that people remember me. Some of them, I'd rather they forget. But most of them, I think, I'm glad they remember it. So let's talk a little bit about this title here and what it means. So if you think of the word leadership, how would you define that? Let's get a couple people defining leadership. I mean, I know how I define leadership, but how would you define leadership? Young man who just bought a cowboy hat, give it up for him, huh? How would you define leadership? Just think off the top of your head.
Somebody that has a very strong opinion and that people like.
Okay, so you define a leader. Now define what that person does, leadership. Let me help you. So you talk about someone who has a strong opinion, and who people like. He's got a picture in his mind of someone, you know that, right? What does that person who has an opinion and is like, what do they actually accomplish, and how do they do what they do?
They just get stuff done. Get some stuff done.
Okay. Leadership, it could be as simple as this. Leadership is getting stuff done. I had to be careful with that word, stuff. Getting stuff done, right? Actually, we have a sticker with my team that says, I'm part of the Get Stuff Done Club. Getting stuff done. Now, how you do that is really how people remember you. They may say he or she got stuff done, but a lot of it has to be sometimes, how did you do that? What is your personal leadership and what's your ethical leadership? How about another example of what do you think, how would you define leadership? Speak right into that. Tell us your name first.
My name is Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
It's someone that's able to push people toward a direction or idea.
Say what? It was a great answer, was it? Say it again so they really hear it.
It's someone that's able to push people toward a direction or an idea.
Yeah, so pushing people or pulling or leading people in a direction towards an idea to get something. So I use this definition of leadership. That leadership is stewarding the power given you by others to help accomplish an agreed-upon goal for the common good. Let me say that again. I want you to listen to the words. We're going to explore some of those. Stewarding the power given you by others to accomplish an agreed-upon goal that serves the common good. Let's break that apart a little bit. Let's just start with the word power. Whenever I teach classes on leadership, one of the things I do is I put people in the middle of a room and I say words and I tell them, do you associate those words as positive or negative? And I'm going to different sides of the room. And power is a word. Most people, when they hear the word power, associate it in a negative way. Not everybody, but a lot of people do. Power is not negative or positive by itself. It's how it's used, right? Because it is power. When you have a leadership role, whether it's given you, whether you've taken it on, whether it's in school, whether it's in your church, whether it's in your family, whether it's in your group of friends, you have some power. And it's actually been given to you. Sometimes it's given to you because you're elected into a role. Sometimes it's given to you because maybe you've taken it. Sometimes it's given you by a group of friends because they kind of assumed you're the one who is, what was the term you used? Gets things done. No, what was it? No, what was the first one? Describe the leader. What was it? What are the words you used? People like you and you have an opinion, right? Sometimes just because you're likable, you become the leader. Make sense? And so that's the power that's given you. How do you, and I love this word, steward that. So we often think of stewardship in terms of money sometimes. That's how we talk about it in the church. But stewarding is really taking whatever you have and using it in a way that it serves others and making sure it can be replicated or making sure it can get done, making sure you have the resources to get things accomplished. So how do you steward the power that's given to you by others? Because you probably have seen the cartoons or the pictures of the person who's leading and nobody's following. If you're leading and no one's following, or you're not with anybody, you're really not leading, right? Let's just say that. You're kind of on your own. So stewarding the power given to you by others to accomplish an agreed-upon goal. And that's important, too, because sometimes we may think, and let me tell you, Don Christian was that type of person. I always thought, I figured I knew what was good for everybody, and we were going to go that way, whether they wanted to or not, and that doesn't work. In fact, I wouldn't even call it leadership. Even if you could get them to do it, you're kind of forcing people. It's what we call about pulling people along or pushing people, right? You don't want to be pushing people. You want to be working together. So an agreed-upon goal. And I added this last piece because this is really important for the common good. Because there are people in the world who have leadership roles, sometimes very well-known, national leaders, sometimes not well-known, sometimes even within small groups, maybe even in families, that they can get people to do things. They may even agree to it, but it hurts others. I guess the most common example I think about today is what's happening in Russia, right? There's a leader, Putin, right? He's taking people along, getting things done, but he's harming people, right? People are dying, people are leaving homes. And because of that, I can't really call it leadership because it's not for the common good. And as Christians, that's our calling, right? We enter the world. We're going to talk about this idea of vocation and calling in this role as well. So I'm going to say that one more time, and I'm going to ask the question, what word in this definition most resonates with you? Stewarding the power given you to help others. I got to make sure given to you by others to achieve an agreed-upon goal that serves the common good. Stewarding the power given you by others to achieve an agreed-upon goal for the common good. What phrase or word most resonates with you?
Stewarding.
Talk a little bit about why that's important to you. Why that resonates for you.
Because it doesn't imply ownership. It just, you're now a caretaker.
Oh, yes. That's a great word for that, right? You are caring for others, right, with that power. Yeah. You don't own it. Because I will tell you, those of you who have been in leadership roles, and I've been in many in my lifetime, that can go away like that. And so you are just a steward of that power. Thank you. Yes. Tell us your name, and then what resonates with you?
My name's Luke, and I would say the word that resonates is given.
Oh, tell us, why does that resonate for you?
Because I think that the best leaders and the people who exude the best leadership, the leadership was given to them. It was not taken.
Yeah. It's given in lots of ways, isn't it? It is given, again, like we talk about. I remember I'm looking at you all, most of you in high school right now. My picture of my high school leadership was in the band. I was a bandy. I hung out of the band room all the time. Actually became a band director for a few years. And we had election for the president of the band. And this is one of my, I won't call it a negative story, but I assumed, because I had a big personality, people liked me and I had strong opinions, I assumed I was going to get elected. And I acted like I was going to get elected. You know what happened? Didn't happen. I mean, I was devastated. I just assumed, most people assumed, I think because I assumed, that's why I didn't get elected, right? But it, what I was trying to take it, and it wasn't given to me. And it was a moment in my life I'll never forget. So let's talk about personal and ethical leadership. We describe leadership, but really I believe it is your story and how you're remembered is not so much about what you get done, about that definition, but it's about how you do it. So personal leadership for me, if I was to describe that, it's what you believe about leadership, your definition, and what are you doing to prepare for that? What do you believe about leadership? Your pictures of people. And one of the things I used to do in class is ask people to draw a picture of a leader. Give them crayons, give them a piece of paper, draw a picture. Most people drew older white males because that's what they saw. And we had to debunk some of that because I believe everyone leads in different places and times. But everyone has a picture in their mind of what a leader is and what a leader does because of the experience. And as you learn, as you go through life, as you have different experiences, as you watch other leaders, that picture changes a little bit. My definition I just gave you actually evolved over about 40 years. And it wasn't until about 10 years ago that that really fleshed itself out for me completely. Because I observed things, I did different things. But this personal leadership is what do you believe about it, and what do you do to prepare for it? I think about leadership practices. Again, many of you probably don't sit here and wake up every morning and go, what am I going to do to be a better leader? Some of you probably do. I'll tell you that has consumed me in my life. It's something I've studied, something I've looked about, thought about, something I talk with people about all the time. What do I do to be a better leader? We're going to talk about just a few examples in a few minutes. But I believe that your personal leadership is shaped every single day you wake up. And everything you do, every interaction you have, because you are kind of exercising. Exercising, like we just talked about. If you think about whatever your definition of leadership is and what a leader should do, how are you exercising that, what I would call your leadership muscle? I don't know if I've ever used that phrase before. What's your leadership? How do you exercise your leadership muscle? So again, one of the things leaders do is make decisions, right? We make decisions. Sometimes big decisions, sometimes very simple decisions. All day long, you are making decisions. You made a decision to show up in this room today. Made a decision a long time ago to get on a plane or get on a bus or get in a car and come down to Texas for a week. Made a decision to do that, and you stuck with that decision, and you practice that. You make a decision to show up on time. We'll talk about some of those in a little bit. So that's personal leadership. We'll come back to some more of that. What you believe about leadership and what you do to prepare yourself. Ethical leadership is what do you believe about people and how do you treat them in your leadership role? What do you believe about people and how do you treat them as a leader? And those are really your moral values. Those are principles by which you live. So look at the people around you. Go ahead, take a look at people next to you. You think about the people you see that you know well or don't know well. But if you're anything like me, when you look at someone, you begin to form an opinion in your mind, right? What age are they? What do they look like? How are they sitting? What are they wearing? And go on and on. And we all have to, sort through that in our minds. Otherwise, we'd go crazy. Now, you know, when people talk about prejudice as a bad thing, prejudice in and of itself is not a bad thing. I have to be prejudiced about because, in the best sense, I have to sort through in my mind what I believe about people and know about people. Now, again, like power, it can be negative or positive. Prejudices can be negative or positive, right? So what you believe, which again is shaped by your upbringing, how you think about your faith. You know, there's, when I talk about Concordia University, Texas, we talk about a place for students from all backgrounds. And when I look at our student body and I see them and I remind people, we can't judge or have negative prejudice against any type of student. And we have to get rid of any barriers to students because our theology tells us this: God so loved the world. God didn't just love people who come to youth gatherings. God doesn't just love people from the Midwest. God doesn't just love Cubs fans, though if you're a Cubs fan, you believe that God only loves Cubs fans. Any Cubs fans in the room? You raise it high. Yes, thank you. That's it. All right. We got a few of us. Go Cubs. 2016, right? All right. Sorry. Here's what you need to know about me. You need to know that if you're hanging out with me for more than an hour, you will know I'm a Cubs fan. You also probably know I love Jesus, too, at the same time, right? That's why I tell people, you know, your relationship, I'm going off on off tangent here for a second, but in your relationship with people, this is what, if you're honest and open with people, they're going to learn something about you. So be vulnerable, right? So I'm going to be vulnerable and talk about being a Cubs fan, right? But at the same time, if you've spent time with me and don't know that I love Jesus, what's wrong with me too, right? It's kind of, I don't have to force either one of those. They just come. As a little sidebar, we'll come back to this topic now, right? So what you believe, right? Personal leadership, how you treat people, ethical leadership, is how you will be remembered. So if you want to think about what it is to be remembered, I want you to think about, what do you believe about leadership? What's your personal leadership and what's your ethical leadership? How do you treat people? And what do you do to help them achieve their goals as a leader? Let me pause for a second on this topic. How will you be remembered? I always ask this question. I asked a couple of you different things. Why is what you say important? So when I put this title together, I had to ask myself, why is it important to be remembered? And I thought through that. And it was more than just, hey, isn't that cool? They know who I am. Or a wonderful thing on my gravestone. Or they know me, right? I think there's three things of why it's important to be remembered. Number one, when you are remembered, it affirms your gifts. As I thought about this topic, I went back to my fourth grade teacher. Her name is Janet Zimdo, Elgin, Illinois, St. John's Lutheran School. And every now and then, I still see her from time to time. She was a young teacher. And she, whenever she sees me, she says this: Donald, her and my mother called me Donald. Donald, you were always a curious student. And people have told me that since then, too, right? But she, that's the story she remembers about me. And when she says that to me, I say to myself, oh, that's a good thing. My mom used to call me nosy. I would say, Mom, I'm not nosy, I'm just curious. I'm my fourth grade teacher. So, number one, it affirms your gifts when people remember you. Number two, it provides opportunities for you. My callings and vocations and career have led me in lots of different directions, none of which I sought out for the most part, other than maybe my very first job, even that somebody called me into it, and maybe this last job. But because I believe I was remembered for what I did, people came and tapped me on the shoulder to do something different. And I think when you're remembered, opportunities to live out your vocation open up in so many different ways. So it's important to be remembered, but I think maybe the most important part is when you are remembered, you are providing an example for others. People want to know what you're doing. When you lead in a way that is personal and ethical, when you lead in a way that's remembered, people then go, I can do that too. I think one of the greatest accomplishments of leaders is the other leaders they produce. And so when I look at my team today, I ask the question, how many of them will become college presidents someday? And I've got three or four. And I believe that they will follow in my footsteps somewhere else. So, why do you want to be remembered? For me, it affirms your gifts. It's good to hear that you do something really well. It's really good to hear. And when people tell me your name again? Chris. When they say to you, Chris, you, I don't know what you do, Chris, but what do you, what, what, what do you, What kind of things do you do at school?
At school, I guess calculus is the big thing I do at
school. You're math. You love math?
I love math.
All right. Chris, you are fantastic at math. Now, oftentimes, here's what people do. Maybe. They kind of the aw shucks type of thing. Here's what you do. You look at them and say, thank you. And then, you really want to learn something about yourself? Tell me why you say that. So let me tell you a little story about me where I learned about my leadership. I think it was the first time. So I interviewed for the presidency at Concordia University St. Paul up in Minnesota in 2011. Didn't get it, but I interviewed for it. And as I was getting ready to go on that interview, all my colleagues walked in my office and would say to me, oh, you'd make a great president. And I first of all said, thank you. And then I said, tell me why. It was some of the most interesting conversations I've ever had in my life. Because they got to affirm my gifts, right? I got to hear what was important to them so I could give them and help lead them better. And we just formed, there was something that happened in that conversation. Vulnerability, right? There's a great vulnerability in me asking that question and great vulnerability in them actually answering the question. So if you want to practice your leadership muscle, when people affirm you, ask them that question. Thank you, now tell me why you affirmed that. And you will hear things that will be great for you. This is your story, right? We've been talking a lot about story in our theme, in all things. How Christ is in all things, right? I love the phrase from Colossians, the first chapter, verse 16, that says, in all things were created through him and for him. Let's say that again. All things were created through him and for him. And think about what we've just been talking about. Helping people accomplish goals in their lives. One of the things, again, this role I get right now, my current vocation, there is nothing greater than to watch a graduate from Concordia University, Texas, walk across the stage and shake my hand. And for many of them, they never could have thought about being in college. We talk about first-generation college students, right? Those who in their family are the very first to go to college. Or an older student who maybe flunked out early on, then came back, and they graduate, and they walk across the stage, and I see the biggest smiles, and I see tears, and to know that I had a part in that. And I believe because vocation is that I am serving God for them, right? Christ is in all things and through all things and for all things. We use the word created. I believe you create it as leaders, right? Everyone else believes you don't need a title to be a leader. Let me say that again. You don't need a title to be a leader. Everybody in their life, somewhere, someplace, will lead. It may be an elected position. It may be an appointed position. It may be, as a parent, you will lead a family. It may be, a lot of my people my age are doing this as a child leading a parent who's growing older. It may be wherever God puts you to live out your vocation, sometimes you have to step into a role and do that leading, making decisions, moving people forward toward an agreed upon goal. And when we use the word vocation, I think you've already heard this, but when we use the word vocation, Concordia, in our church body, we talk about these two things, giving glory to God and serving the neighbor. We give glory to God, we serve the neighbor. And this is what I believe about those. We give glory to God by doing our role in our vocation, whatever it is, whether it's leader, whether it's a mathematician, whatever it might be, whether it's a parent, whether it's a child, whether it's a spouse. We do that by doing it very well. If God has put you in a position to serve, and he has gifted you to serve, then it is up to us to do it very well. Most of you in this room are students in a high school somewhere or in some place. That's a vocation. We talked to our students about, you now have moved from a high school student to a college student. What is the vocation of a college student? And one, number one is to do your studying and work very well. Because when you do it well as an individual, you serve other students around you. As a member of a team, football, basketball, track, whatever it might be, when you do your job very well, it helps those around you. As a member of a family, parent, spouse, child, whatever it might be, sibling, cousin, when you do that very well, it helps those around you. So let's talk about what it means to do things very well. How will you get better? How will you exercise that leadership muscle? I'm going to give a couple ideas, and then I want you to think about what they are for you, because everyone will have specific ones individually. First of all, I think it begins by really getting a definition of leadership. So write down what's going to be your definition of leadership. Just take a few moments in the next day or two. Write it down. What does it mean to me? What does it look like? Remember, don't confuse what a leader does or is between what leadership accomplishes. Because I can be a certain way. I can look the part. I can even act the part. But if nothing gets accomplished, it's really not leading. So what is your definition of leadership? And then it's really looking and saying to yourself, what are the skills and practices I need to go through? And I wrote a couple down here. So I believe that every time you show up on time, you're practicing leadership. You've probably heard this phrase, right? If you want to be on time, how early do you have to be? 5, 10, 15 minutes, right? If you're on time, you're late. And if you're late, don't bother to show up. I'm not sure about that. I still want you in the room. But every time you show up on time, you are practicing leadership because you're committing to doing something you said you would do. Every time you prepare for what's next, you're practicing leadership. So whether it's here over the next couple days, whether it's back at home, whether it is in with your team, with your group, your family, every time you prepare yourself for what's next, you're practicing leadership. Every time you show kindness to others, especially those who others might not show kindness to. I often challenge my students to be the first one to show up in a class, or second or third one to show up in a classroom. And especially that first week of classes. So I want you to think about you're going back to school in a month or so, whether you're going back off to college or back to high school or wherever that might take you. You walk in that room, I want you, them to look around and find the person who is sitting by themselves. Maybe it'll happen here. Think about this. Walk into a room, find someone who is sitting by themselves, go sit next to them, and engage in the conversation. Now, for some of you who are more internal people, that scares the heck out of you. Those of you who are like external people are like, I can't wait to do that. Show me where. But here's how it is. First of all, if you're an internal person and it's hard to do that, you really need to practice it. It'll be you will make another internal, probably another person just like you because they're sitting by themselves. And just ask some simple questions. Where are you from, right? What do you do? Where do you go to school? What do you like to do in school? What do you like to study, etc. And you never know what you might find out. But I believe that every time you show kindness to someone, especially those who aren't showing kindness by others, you're practicing getting ready to lead well. Every time you speak up, every time you raise your hand and talk, especially if you're not forced to do it, and speak well, you're practicing your leadership. And especially when others aren't speaking up. You know what those times are, right? It could be about a tough topic. It might be about other individuals in a group that you're hanging out with. It might be about something in a class which, that's not being said or is being said that needs to be spoken against. And thinking out, how do I say this? What do I say? And how do I do it well? And then being willing to raise it. Now, again, those of you who are internal people, that scares the heck out of. But don't rush into it. By the way, internal people, I want to give you a little bit of advice in a classroom. I'm not an internal person, right? If I was an internal person, I probably wouldn't be standing up here doing this, engaging with people. I'm those extroverts. But I've learned that internal thinkers and internal processors have some of the best things to say, and the world is missing out on what you think and don't say. And here's what happens a lot of times in classrooms or other groups. You get asked a question. So, remind me the name again?
Who's
Alyssa. Alyssa, don't know if you're internal or external, doesn't matter. Pretend you're internal, right? I, as an instructor, teacher, professor, ask you a question. You need time to think about it, right? So internal people have learned to do what? Well, I don't know. And what does the professor or teacher do? They go on to the next person. Or I haven't really thought. It's all kinds of lines that internal people have practiced to not have to speak quickly. Because they can't. So as an instructor, I have learned to give people time. But as a student or as an individual in a room, boardroom, classroom, you name it, right? To raise your hand and go, can I have a minute to think about that? Those of you who are internal processors need to learn the line, can I have a minute to think about it? Now think about what you just did too. With that, you were practicing leadership. Because you know you have something to say, but you're not given the time to think about it, to say it well. So ask for the time. And again, really scary thing to do for an internal person. But if you can do that, the world will benefit from what you've been thinking about. Because remember, leadership is about serving others, right? In vocation, we serve others. And if your voice is never heard because you haven't been given the time in that space to form your voice, the world's missing out. So demand that your voice gets heard. A little tip. Take it, whether you're internal or not. Are you internal or external? Yeah, I think probably. I have them the same way. I find out that I love to engage with people, but then I got to just back off sometimes, right? All right. Yeah, here's one I want you to think about. Every time you choose not to, dot, 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 you're practicing leadership. There are lots of things that we do that probably we sometimes know we shouldn't. Things we say, ways we behave, where we go. Things we eat, things we don't non-Christian, not exercising enough, right? So every time I choose to exercise, or choose to, somebody I choose to exercise, I don't like it, but I know it's good for me. So I choose to do it, I'm practicing leadership. Because I'm making a decision and sticking to it. So every time you choose not to do something, every time you choose to do something that is good for you and for others, you're practicing that. Here's a very simple one. Every time you proofread what you write, you're practicing leadership. I don't care if it's a paper, if it's a text, if it's an email, if it's whatever you're writing out. And here's why I say that's important. First of all, leaders get stuff accomplished through what they write and say. So it's important to practice that. But more important is when you are sending something to someone, what it says to them is you cared enough to do it well. Every time you proofread what you write, you're practicing leadership. Every time you give 110%, here's what I know about most of you in this room. Because you're here, you have learned how to get an A, put it in quotes, an A, by doing about 60% of what you're capable of. Now, all of you can't do what most of you have learned. This is how school is. You can get by with doing about 60%. How life is. I have to tell you this. I met a young lady this morning. I went to church at Trinity Lutheran Church here in Houston, where we used to attend. And I saw a young lady that I watched grow up. She just graduated from college. This young lady said this to me. I said, what are you going to do about work? What does it mean? And she said, well, I'm not going to do so well that they start giving me more to do. She said, I'm just above mediocre. I think she was serious. I was like, oh my gosh, I got to talk to you, young lady. Because I believe that when you do 110% of when you're asked to do something, you will be what? Remembered. You'll be remembered, right? Because you will be better than others. Here's what I know. Athletes, those of you who are athletes in the room, you've learned this pretty much, right? You want to be the starter. You want to be in the game. And you know that if you don't give 110%, you won't be in the game. Because it's more than just getting an A. You want to be in the game, you want to win. You want to have championships. You want the ring. But the rest of life, when you give 110%, people know it. So here's what I tell students. When they give 110%, I will remember them. I will never teach them. I will never have them in a class. I may not know them when they come in, but I remember them because I will hear their stories. Their story will be told over and over again, and they will be remembered, and they will do great things in life. Let me end with this one. Anytime you control your anger, you're practicing leadership. Doesn't mean you shouldn't be angry. Let me say that. There are times we need to be angry, especially as leaders. We need to raise a hand and call sin, sin. Every time you control that and think about it, you're practicing leadership. One of the things in my position, as I meet with people, pretty much every conversation I have with an employee is what I call a fragile conversation. It might be a good conversation, might be a bad conversation, but they're fragile because I know that in my role, in stewarding the power given to me, I have a different relationship with that person. And so I have to think deeply about what am I going to say? How am I going to say that? How do I control what I say? I might be incredibly angry and have a right to be. And how do I control that anger? Let me check time here. How are we doing? We doing good? All right. We got a few minutes. Let's get to this point. Leadership is often glorified. And we look at leaders. We have pictures of leaders, right? We've heard some stories of them. We have that picture in mind. We want to lead because it makes a difference. We want to lead because we want to be known. The truth is, in any leadership role, you will also screw up. Like I said, there's some stories I don't want to be remembered for. Here's what I want you to hear. When you screw up, leadership or otherwise, when you screw up, and you will, we move from your story to God's story. Right? That's where we start. We remember. And as people in this room, you know this. You've heard it. You believe it. You understand it. That when we screw up, we begin with the story of reconciliation. Because God, through Christ, has redeemed us. And His unconditional love is for us. We do not have to earn that love. I'll tell you a real quick story about myself, how the moment this happened to me, I was about 30 years old. I knew this, right? I grew up knowing this. I heard it. I even believed it. But I want to tell you that there was a moment in my life where I was band director, and I liked to be liked. I still know that. I like to be liked. I read a phrase in a book I was reading about God's unconditional love. And something happened to me that said, I don't have to put on the show anymore. I will screw up. I know that. But I begin with that. And once I understood that I could begin with God's love for me when I screw up, here's the next things that happen. One, acknowledge your mistake. That's a hard thing to do for some of us in this room. Because what we do well. And we get patted on the back for doing things well. We're told we do things well. You're here for some reason, probably because you lead already, and you're told you lead. And you screw up, and you don't want that. You like to be liked. But if when you can admit that you made a mistake, number one, to say I'm sorry. Secondly, go to that person, ask for forgiveness. That's a hard one, too. Because you are humbling yourself in front of someone else. I know I made a mistake. I need to be forgiven by that person. Because I already know I'm forgiven by God, right? So I can go to that person. And third, accept the consequences. That might be the hardest one. Because I think there's a lot of people in this world who believe that when they ask for forgiveness, they're given forgiveness, the consequences go away. In this world, there are consequences. In this relationship, our relationship with Jesus, the consequences have been taken care of eternally. But in this world, in relationship of authority, responsibility, and accountability, there will be consequences. And when you can admit you've done something wrong, when you can ask forgiveness, and when you can accept the consequences, you know what you're doing? Practicing leadership. Writing your story by which you will be remembered. So we're going to practice something real quick. First of all, I'd like for you to practice with me saying two words. I'm sorry. Can we practice that? Let's do it together. Ready? One more time. Yeah. Well, there's a difference between I'm sorry I got caught versus I'm really deeply sorry for what I did. I get that, but I'm really sorry. There's something that happens in you when you can say to somebody, I'm sorry. But what happens next is what's really important. And when someone says they're sorry to you, I want you to practice these two words with me. No, three words. I forgive you. Let's try that. One more time. Those sound very simple, but I'll tell you they're the three hardest words to say and probably the three most powerful words. They are words of leadership. Because here's what, you know this, what happens when somebody comes to you or you say to somebody, I'm sorry, what's our first response? Don't worry about it. Or that's no big, forget about it, right? And it is the absolute worst thing you can say to somebody. Because if I offend you, and really deeply I'm sorry for it, and I come to you and say, I'm sorry, what I'm really looking for is forgiveness, not don't worry about it. But it's really hard to say that, isn't it? Let's practice. Well, I've practiced with you already. Let's practice over here. I'm sorry.
I forgive you.
Oh, that was well done. Give him a big hand, huh? Have you ever said that to somebody?
Not as much as I should.
Ah, all right, yeah. Try it. Try it over the next 24 hours. Maybe there is somebody either sitting with you now or not sitting with you that you need to go to and say, I'm sorry. Or somebody that you know who has come to you and said, I'm sorry, and you weren't able to say those words. Because I believe, you know, we talk about, you hear the word sometimes, Christian leadership. Christian leadership is not just being a good leader. Christian leadership is about bringing Christ to people in that role. And the way we get to wear the mask of God in some powerful ways are proclaiming God's forgiveness to others. Because in that, when I can say to you, I forgive you, I have restored a relationship. Now, the consequence may mean that relationship is broken a little bit, but I've begun to restore it and then accept that consequence. Let me finish up here real quickly. Two simple ways to practice your leadership, your personal leadership, and your ethical leadership, and ways I think you will be remembered. If this is important to you, you'll be remembered. How will you be remembered? Here are ways you do it. Do what you say you will do, especially when no one is watching. Do what you say you will do. It's really easy to say, I'll do X, because it will get rewarded for that, and not following up. Do what you say you will do. Sometimes very simple, sometimes very difficult. And secondly, treat others in accord with what you say you believe about others. Again, especially when no one's watching. We can espouse and mouth off all kinds of things about what we believe about people or what we believe about life, but if we don't live that out, we may be remembered, but not for what we want to be remembered for. I will tell you again that this is something that's not just written on your gravestone. It is something that will affect you tomorrow, next year, 5 years, 10 years, and for me, 45 years. As I sit in this role, doing what I say I will do is critical because lots of people watch. And treating others as I talk about treating others is critical because lots of people watch. And if I want to live out my calling to stewarding the power given me by others to help them achieve an agreed-upon goal for the common good, they've got to trust me. The story that I want them to remember me by is not so much, wasn't he a great guy? But how did he treat others? How did he act? How did he make decisions that really resonated with what he said he would do? And when Jesus was asked what the greatest commandment was, he said it very simply. Love God, love your neighbor. Right? And I think that loving God and loving your neighbor is the cornerstone of personal leadership. I believe that loving God and loving your neighbor is the cornerstone of ethical leadership. And I believe that loving God and loving your neighbor is the cornerstone to how you will be remembered. Let's pray. Our God, Heavenly Father, we thank you for this gathering, for bringing people from across the world together to hear, to learn, to serve, to worship, and to remind ourselves to know, understand, and believe that Christ is in all things. Father, in our roles as leaders, wherever that might be, wherever you have put us, help us do that in a way that is so well done, that it serves others, advances your kingdom, and others see Christ in and through us, and we bring Christ to them in all things. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you all for being here. Great to have you here. Have a great rest of the day.